Welcome, everyone, to a fresh edition of Draft on Tap. My name is Aldo Gandia. Just want to let you know that in 23 hours from now, we'll have already opened up our brand new Christmas present, Caleb Williams. It better be Caleb Williams at this point. But I hope that you will join us here at the Barroom Network. We're going to have 3 hours of draft coverage tomorrow. And then tomorrow morning, I will have a short little program previewing what's going on tomorrow night and also talking to Nick Baumgartner. Gardner over at the Athletic. He's going to give us a clue as to what the NFC North teams will need. Let me bring in Danny Shimon, who just before we went on live told me he has drafted 170 players. Danny, how are you? Your eyes must be tired.
I've scouted 170 players. I was counting the numbers of the guys I was going through. No, I mean, this is my time of year. This is my Christmas Eve. Obviously, the draft is the moment that I, you know, all scouts live for, and you know, people like me that we live for. So this is an exciting time. Like I said, you know, within less than 23 hours, you know, we'll have a new face of the franchise here in Chicago, and obviously we have that second pick coming up, number 9, which I'm sure we'll get into later on here in the program. But it's exciting times, and we have another terrific show lined up for you guys tonight, and we have a great guest waiting to jump on here real quick. But yeah, definitely just pumped up and excited. And if I talk too fast today, it's because the juices are flowing. It's almost draft night, so excuse my slurring of the words if I do.
And it's also, you know, all of the hours that you spent into the night turning that tape, and I've been doing graphics for our shows and so forth. So by the end of this weekend, Danny and I were talking about this. We don't want to have anything to do with football for a little while. We need a break.
I'm off training camp, Aldo.
There you go.
You'll see me. Maybe you'll see me on a beach somewhere, but that's about it.
Exactly. Well, one of the things that we've done all season long is bring you some really interesting guests, and the football conversation between Danny and those guests has been fantastic. And that's going to happen again today because I'm going to bring in Matt Waldman of the Rookie Scouting Portfolio. Matt created that. Well, how long ago was that you created it, Matt?
This is my 19th year in publication.
That is amazing. And how long now have you been over at footballguys.com?
I've been at Football Guys since 2009, and the RSP has been around since 2006. And RSP is pretty much my full-time endeavor, and Football Guys is a great organization to be a part of. I've been a senior staff writer since 2009. So, you know, I get a little bit of that work that I do during the fall, which is nice because it helps me prepare in terms of, I scout all year long, but it's fun to look at and very helpful and important to look at NFL talent so that you help inform how you project college talent. That's a vital part of effective scouting, in my opinion.
Well, and I want to thank you, Matt, and the rest of the guys over at footballguys.com, where you're still senior editor over there, right?
I'm a senior staff writer. Yep, still there.
Yeah, senior staff writer. I want to thank you guys because when I first got into fantasy football, I said, I need help, man. And so the first 3 or 4 years that I played, I won a couple of championships, and I owe it really all to you guys. You guys provided so much great information. And I tell everyone who is not involved in fantasy football, you know what? You learn so much about the players in the league, and it becomes, when you turn on the TV on Sunday, it becomes a robust experience because you've got knowledge now of what this guy's strengths are, what this team's strengths are, and so forth. And you don't even have to be on a fantasy football team to enjoy what's written or said or produced about fantasy football. So great job for you. And congratulations on the Rookie Scouting Portfolio. I'm going to turn it over to Danny because I know he's itching to talk prospects with you. Take it away, fellas.
All right. Again, Matt, thanks again for joining us tonight. And as I've talked earlier in the beginning of the show here, tomorrow is the big day, and that's, you know, everyone here in Chicago is excited, obviously, with the new, you know, presumably the new face of the franchise and Caleb Williams being drafted. So let's just start off right there with the first, you know, first pick over there with Caleb Williams. What are your thoughts and your, you know, scouting reports on Caleb Williams coming out of USC this year?
Well, sure. I think he's probably, I mean, really, there's not going to be much more that I'm going to say on a basic level that everyone else hasn't already said for months or years. I mean, he is, in my opinion, really, and also I know because I also provide scouting reports to his private quarterback coach, Will Hewlett, who I had on my podcast yesterday and put that podcast out where we talked about Caleb. But Caleb is influenced heavily by Aaron Rodgers in terms of the player that he really looked up to and tried to model a lot of his game after. He has some of the physical characteristics that you see of Patrick Mahomes in terms of what we talked about yesterday, which is the T-spine rotation, the ability to turn your hips in a manner where it really opens up the way that you can throw the ball in a variety of scenarios that a lot of athletes cannot. But on top of more than anything, what I've seen with him is that he's a very good pocket player. And there are a lot of people who are polarized on that idea because they see him running around to create plays. But I find that a lot of people in the draft community really don't have a good feel for what good pocket management is. And there are certainly times where Caleb Williams will play a little hero ball when he feels forced to, or he's in situations where he's going to try and push the envelope with his athletic ability because he's succeeded as a younger player. That's happened with players ranging from Matthew Stafford and, you know, Patrick Mahomes to Zach Wilson and Drew Lock. You know, so people often confuse what's the difference between prospects of those heights and those lows. And really it's about who invites pressure, who also is too inefficient with the way that they move in the pocket, and knowing when to stay in it, when to climb it, when to work outside of it. And Caleb Williams understands how to do those things at a level that maybe the latter guys I mentioned, Wilson and Locke, didn't always do very well. So, you know, you may have seen some of the downturn of production in his season last year. But really, my philosophy when you scout talent is about, does the player show physically, mentally, conceptually, and technically the ability to integrate all those skill sets to create positive plays, or at least put their teammates in position to make positive plays? And that takes production out of the factor. And that should be taken out in certain ways as a factor when you're just scouting skills, because you want to project to an NFL level. And when you project to the NFL level, his decision-making is going to mature. I don't think it's anything that's a major issue long-term based on what I've seen in 19 years of looking at quarterbacks. He's going to have some ups and downs in some scenarios that most guys do who lean on their physical skills, but he has enough of the conceptual and technical skills to be a top-tier quarterback in this league. He's an instant starter in my eyes, and as long as the Bears don't do what they did in the beginning of their career, of Justin Fields' career, if they don't do what they did at the very beginning of that, I think that his chances of succeeding will be very strong. And I think he's actually a little more childproof than Justin Fields is when it comes to how ownership or coaching might be at risk of following that up in the way that the Bears were in the past with Fields. So yeah, I think that he's the safest quarterback in this draft class. And I even think that if he gets tampered with a little bit, he'll still be okay.
So I want to follow up on that childproof comment you just made. And that's one of the biggest fears I have in terms of, or criticisms I had with Brian Poles. Like, if you're going to do this, if you're going to clean house with the quarterback and offensive coordinator and all that stuff, just clean house with the head coach as well. Because obviously Matt Eberflus going into the next year with some pressure on him to go ahead and expand on those 7 wins, make the playoffs, or at least compete for the playoffs, contend for the playoffs. So you said he's childproof. So if the Bears do go, say, 7-10 and Eberflus is gone and the staff is gone, explain what you mean by he's childproof.
Well, what I mean by that is that he's someone that, you know, when you looked at Justin Fields, while I still think that there's hope for him to develop on the right team and have a little bit of a reset year where he can sit and observe and work on aspects of his game that he needs help with, some of those aspects have always been processing speed and being able to read the leverage and act at the right time and not be either a beat late or just not simply see certain types of coverages. And a lot of that has to do with when you're new to the league and you're developing as a player, you're still working. Some of the things that you're working on to enhance your processing is identifying coverages, the speed and confidence in which you act on what you identify, and then incorporating that all into incorporating all of your good foot, you know, what your footwork should be, you know, how you're, what you're seeing in the pocket, your spatial awareness and feel of how you move in the pocket, as well as pre-snap tells and post-snap, early post-snap tells of what defenses are doing, as well as just learning the playbook. Oh, and you know, you're 20, 21, 22, 23, and this is maybe the first time you're living alone on your own in a new city, people with a lot of money. And, you know, let's not underestimate that. I see a little gray in your beard. I think you know the perspective of what you were like at that age compared to where you are now. And so that's a lot of bandwidth. And so all that bandwidth sucks away from how confident you are at processing things. And if your offensive line isn't playing well, your coaches aren't putting you in good situations, and your receivers may not be top-notch, then you're in a scenario where you start to regress in areas that you thought you had down, like that footwork, those pre-snap, post-snap tells, ability to remember the playbook, you know, certain things that you thought you had mastered in high school are now falling apart, and people are going on, you know, on social media and saying, I thought you guys said he could do that in college. Mm-hmm. He's not doing that at all, and this is the pros. That's what happens when you regress. So I would say with, you know, Caleb Williams, the difference is that he does process the field better and read it better pre and post snap and move in the pocket better than Fields did on an efficiency level. So that when, if things start to go wrong, his game isn't going to regress as far as Fields will. There won't be as much questioning of himself in certain areas. And he's going to be able to create a little bit better and be a little smarter about things that he's doing, because he's not going to be as overwhelmed with questioning his game the way that he actually did and said, I got to go back and play my own game. Caleb Williams is going to be more the type that's going to push back and say, I know what my game is. Don't try and tell me or gaslight me into telling me what my game is or isn't. You know, I know that there's things I've got to do, but behind the scenes, he'll probably say, someone's got a block here, or let's take this play out. Let's take this play out of the playbook. Let's do some things that we can make this work. And on top of that, I think it's also that I like the idea, while a lot of fans may not like that Eberflus is still here, I would say if we're going to give a player one more chance, you give your coach one more chance to show that they've learned. And at least the fact of the matter is now you have, you know, DJ Moore, who is in, you know, still in the peak physical part of his career that is probably intersecting with the peak conceptual part. And you have Allen, who is probably, you know, still, you know, showed last year that he can still play at peak level, even if maybe people are worried about his physical ability. So you have two guys, especially in Keenan Allen, who's going to be helpful as a veteran to help Caleb Williams a lot in terms of like in the huddle, reading defenses, being on the same page, and helping him understand some situational football or reaffirm or validate some conceptual things that need to happen. And that's not something that the Bears have had in their receiving room.
And one thing that you and I both agree on, sounds like we agree on, is the structure that's needed within the coaching staff, within the offense. And we saw last year at USC where some of that was, looks like it was gone. It was Caleb kind of trying to make plays on his own, and that's where he got himself in trouble, you know, missing receivers, not throwing it on time, so on and so forth. My question is, how much of Shane Waldron's background do you know of? And because out here in Chicago, we're just kind of like, all right, you know, Seattle – he had success with, you know, Russell Wilson went to a Pro Bowl underneath him. You know, Geno Smith resurrected his career, went to a Pro Bowl underneath him. So in terms of Shane Waldron, first of all, not sure if you know much of his background. If you do, how will he or can he then kind of control, you know, Caleb and make him play within structure of his offense?
Well, I think that more than anything, first thing that we have to start with is maybe take a step back and emphasize to viewers that and listeners that offensive coordinators and quarterback coaches in the NFL do not develop quarterbacks. That's not their job. That's not what they do. It's a big misnomer in some places. It's actually, they are translators of the offensive scheme and game plan. The things that they may work on is something I just talked about yesterday with Will Hewlett, who is a private quarterback coach and works on technique and works on conceptual things and throwing and all those types of efficiencies that are going to help a player be stronger, and it's going to happen more in the offseason, is that what these players, what these coaches do more often is help them maybe translate little things with footwork or get advice about getting the ball out early, little things that might help keep them on the right page with what they need to do within the structure of a specific play. But if they have to work with them on more of the, you know, the fundamental skills, and I don't mean fundamental as in basic or beginner skills, but like the fundamental things that these players are going to have to continue to work on to sharpen their game and be optimized for their development, that's not coming right now. And if it is, that player's in trouble. So I think for Waldron, more than anything, is he's just going to have to understand, what does Williams do well? What are the things that he struggles with a little bit more? And let's eliminate the things that he struggles right now and give him opportunities to do the best work that he can do within the scope of his game. So like with Russell Wilson, you know, maybe you allow him to do certain things off structure more. Maybe there's certain things with play action game, more seam type of work that you're going to do to attack with him in certain areas of the field as opposed to maybe throwing a lot of dig outs or deep outs. Whereas with Caleb Williams, he can make pretty much every throw physically. So what you're really looking for is what are some matchups or alignment looks that we're going to do where maybe we can make certain blitz looks look, you know, be very obvious. What are certain game planning things that we can do that allow coverage reads to be pretty obvious for a young player who's developing and growing, where defenses are going to have a tougher time maybe hiding or disguising what they do. And that will allow Williams to be able to be at his best conceptually more than anything else. I think that's really what they're going to be looking at more than it is about, you know, decision-making, more about putting him in situations where he doesn't have to be as conceptually advanced as a 7-year veteran.
Interesting. So suffice to say, if you're Ryan Poles and you had the power of making the first pick tomorrow night would be?
Yeah, Caleb Williams, because you gave away your other quarterback. What are you going to do? I mean, you know, the only other thing I would say is this. Let's take an alternative universe because it's the obvious question. Caleb Williams, he is and he should be. But if we're going to explore that Ryan Poles, you know, walks down the stairs at whatever the address is for the Halas Hall or wherever it is that should be named after Halas. I don't know. I'm not a Bears fan, so I don't know, guys. Forgive me. But, you know, the house that Halas built, let's just put it that way. If he falls over, knocks his head on something before he falls down, and when he comes to, he gets the bright idea that he's not going to get Caleb Williams. The only possibility I would say is to trade back and get far enough down that you have a pretty good idea that a guy like Michael Penix will be available in the second round. Compared to Caleb, I would say not Bo Nix, but still, but I would say look at like a Michael Penix in the second round. If you really want to go about do that, build in your trenches, continue to build your trenches and do that. Or don't draft a quarterback at all. Continue to build out your trenches and the middle of your defense and get strong there, where any quarterback with, you know, with 5 to 6 years in the league and half a brain left is going to say, this is where I want to finish my career because I've got good 5 years left. And this is where I want to play. There's the only two things. Either you're going to be patient and know that your job security is firm for making that move, which it probably won't be. You take Caleb Williams.
And then with the second first round pick, they got obviously ninth overall. Obviously it depends on who's there, how the board falls. But I'm a huge Roma Dunze fan, and I just said, don't get too cute, like you just said. Don't fall down the stairs and just get some weird brain injury. Keep it simple. Take Roma Dunze, who to me is the second best player in this draft. And, your thoughts on the receiver from Washington.
Sure. He's my second best receiver in this class from my standpoint. And it's not very far away. There's three really strong receivers, I think, in this group who would have been number ones in most of the classes we saw, and at least one of the top three guys in the past 5 years. I would say that with apologies to guys like CeeDee Lamb and Ja'Marr Chase, who I certainly would have put up there, maybe Justin Jefferson in hindsight a little bit, though I had a good grade on him still. But with that said, Odunze fits very well with what the Bears are looking at, because with DJ Moore and Keenan Allen, you have players who are interchangeable at slot and flanker. Okay, so you can use Allen a lot at flanker. Probably when he was younger, it was more optimal to do that, but you can still find matchups for him in that way. And same thing with Moore. Great runner after the catch. And he's gotten better, though, as an outside receiver to the point where he can also be a contested guy on the boundary. But Odunze gives you that really three-position player that you can use at all three spots. And he can, sooner than most, could probably be interchangeable with the other two options so that you have a receiving core that really generates great matchups that makes it easier for Williams to spot the mismatch and head and really get the ball out there quickly and efficiently. So, from my standpoint, Odunze reminds me a lot of Davante Adams. He's a better route runner than I think people realize. He has that really good craft of patience and suddenness off the line. Very strong pass catcher, good at adjusting to the ball and earning position so that he's walling off the defender to the ball. We see a lot of guys that people get impressed with who make acrobatic plays. Don't get fooled by the acrobatic plays where guys are leaping and opening their chest and are literally leaning back and doing a backward swan dive to catch a football. That's a great display of athletic ability, but that often means that you were late to track the ball, late to attack the ball, and you've opened your body up in a manner where you're not going to catch that ball probably 6 times out of 10 against defenders. Well, that makes sense. I like to see that someone said that he studies Davante Adams, and they are very similar. It's easy to see when you watch them enough. That's the type of thing that with Odunze, I think he'd be a very good fit for the Bears because of who they have. He can be put in the easiest positions because you have two veterans who already do the job well, and you're going to maximize what he does early and give him a chance to grow into either one of those roles that you want to put him, flanker, split end, or slot. And he's going to be either a split end or a flanker.
Right. I see him line up as an X outside. But, yeah, I mean, that's a great comp. Davante Adams is my exact comp as well. And you talked about how Caleb kind of mastered his game around, Aaron Rodgers. You remember those Aaron Rodgers to Davante Adams back shoulder throws? I mean, that's something that I see Caleb and Odunze developing here if they get together here in Chicago. I mean, just the way he tracked the ball over his shoulder, either side, just natural hands catch. And I love the physicality at the catch point with the Dunes. And that's a lot of things that some other guys, other than Marvin Harrison Jr., even with him, I think Dunes is just more a physical at the catch point with the, defender coming jerk over him. So, yeah, love that breakdown there of Roma Dunze. So now is there a player, typically with these drafts, obviously, we know that there's hits and misses in the first round. Is there a player that's not getting a lot of hub or a lot of pub by the media, but you have scouted, you've seen any position, right? That you think within, 3, 4, 5 years, you're going to be like, how did this guy slip out of the first or second round?
That's mostly because it's due to behind the scenes types of things. But if I'll give you three players and I'll say something about them quickly. Okay.
Perfect.
I'll say Michael Penix is better than people realize. And I think that there's a lot of subconscious bias against him in some regards. He's better in the middle of the field than people realize. I've tracked, I chart everything in terms of throws that I look at with players. And Penix to me is a tough player in the pocket who can climb efficiently. You don't see a lot. There's not a lot of quarterbacks in this class who climb well.
No, he does.
He's one of them.
Caleb's good too.
Caleb definitely can. Caleb and him can climb. McCarthy can. And I'd say that's about it, on a consistent basis. Some of the guys do it occasionally, but not as much. Penix is, we know he's great on the vertical, and the outside stuff, but he can throw inside. He's just going to have to get a little bit more experience reading more complex defenses doing it. But he's been a good decision maker throughout his career, and he's tougher than people realize. There's a lot of narratives about him that are just kind of silly. So I think Penix is a guy that he's going to fall to the second or the end of the first, and it's going to be a Lamar Jackson-like situation, just a little calmer where people aren't beaten. The owners are just afraid of getting beaten up about Lamar Jackson through the media the way that, about Penix, the way they were about Jackson. I would say receiver-wise, Anaya Smith, the reason he's low on boards is he had an ACL tear and he had a DWI that also includes a, you know, marijuana possession and a gun charge. The gun charge, marijuana possession aren't big deals in terms of what we're looking at in society. DWI was. If he can prove that he's matured, and I know I've hired people in the past who've had records expunged to find out later that they've done those things, and you would have never thought that, especially the kind of people they are in the community and things like that. So let's give people a chance to grow. On the field, he reminds me a lot of Golden Tate. Think about Golden Tate, highly recruited running back at a good program, played pretty well, but was better outside than inside as a runner. So they kicked him out to receiver, and they suddenly go, wait a minute, this guy can run pretty good routes. He's a quick learner, catches the ball like he's a seven-year NFL veteran, and wait till he's in the open field as a runner after the catch. And the Bears have seen enough of Golden Tate to know what I'm talking about. He was a Pro Bowl caliber player at the height of his career. Think of Nia Smith. All those things I described about Tate, I would describe about Smith. And the final plus guy.
The return skills too, Anaya
also,
Smith.
Exactly. Also. And then on top of that, you would also, I would also say that it's a toss up. I mean, I like Jermaine Burton. He reminds me of Robert Woods. And I think he's he can play all three positions. It's just whether or not the character stuff is for real or whether that's just talk. And so I would say he's probably the one I'll say to. That's the reason why he'd be a little bit lower. But those three guys, I think, will play like first round options or flash like that until we see things that show why they dropped if the maturity factor isn't there.
Yeah, but Burton's speed, his ability to take top off defense is something that a lot of teams are gonna get hold of real quickly. And with Penix, going back to him real quick, that ball just explodes out of his hand. I mean, it's the way he spins it really tight. My only thing is the Michigan game, it could be coming back to it. And I just say, all right, you know, he needs to be protected. You know, he's a guy that's going to be back there. And if you have a quick game, if you have an offense that gets rid of the ball with three-step drop, he can do it for you. And again, those deep shots, the accuracy downfield, some of those throws versus Texas in that CFP playoff game, I mean, those were NFL-type throws. So I think Michael Penix is a guy that is going to go. I believe he's going to go in the first round somewhere. So we'll see where it goes. But yeah, great breakdown, great analysis there, Matt.
Matt, I got a few questions from the chat. J2K asks, what's your opinion on Byron Murphy, and is he worthy of a top 10 pick? Also, much love to Sir Hugo.
Well, I'm glad Sir Hugo's making the rounds here. He's my, for those of you who don't know, he's my rescued box safety who plays a lot like the you know, the old Indianapolis short little safety who was really good before injuries took his career. I forgot his
name. Bob Sanders.
Bob Sanders. Yeah, he's Bob Sanders incarnate. I would say that for sure. but so thank you. I'll say this. I'm going to just echo Chad Ryder. I had on a couple of days ago from NFL.com. He's a good friend of mine. And he talked about Byron Murphy being one of his favorite players who he felt like is a spark plug who can give you, gives you that low center of gravity, who can be in the league for a long time and make some Pro Bowls with the type of skills that he has, even if he is an elite athlete in any one singular characteristic. So as you guys know, a lot of you guys may not know, I study four positions and I probably study them at a level the most on a granular level, most don't, but that means that the other guys, I don't know much about. I just got lucky there because I just talked to Chad 2 days ago.
Very good. Jordan Silvera, one of our analysts here at the Bar Room, asked for your thoughts on JJ McCarthy.
Yeah, it's a great question. I thought he was one of the more difficult evaluations that I've had at quarterback in a while. And quarterback's always a difficult one position to evaluate. But the reason it was for me were really three things. Is that when I looked at Zach Wilson years ago, I did not like him. I thought he was basically a little lower than Baker Mayfield in terms of my scoring. And I thought Mayfield was kind of a Jeff Garcia type prospect, not the next coming of Baker Mayfield, Drew Brees, and Russell Wilson rolled into one that I often heard. So when I got asked by Will Hewlett like 6 months ago, is he Russell Wilson 2.0? And I said, probably more. I mean, Zach Wilson 2.0. And I said, JJ McCarthy is probably more Zach Wilson 2.0. If you were to say the next iteration that's improved upon what we saw from Zach Wilson, as opposed to what we saw from him in New York. And it doesn't mean his score is that much higher. The reason being is this, is that Zach Wilson had lows with his processing and decision-making skills and pocket play. He was not a good pocket player. He invited a lot of pressure. He was not pinpoint accurate in areas that you would expect, and he was often 1 to 2 beats late with throwing footballs that were accurate at BYU when you look at box score, but you knew were going to get picked off or cut off by defenders in the NFL, and that's what happened. And that's why you chart and you look through an NFL standard, and a lot of it is about reading leverage, and he just does not read leverage very well at that point. When you look at J.J. McCarthy, he has some of those lows, but he also has really strong highs that Wilson did not have. So what that tells you is that he's capable. He sees things well on occasion. There are just certain situations where he does not see them well, or some of the things that he sees, sometimes you wonder if it's a little bit by accident. And I don't think most of what he saw good was by accident, but I would say that he can be situationally challenged when it comes to the black zone and the red zone, where he's either backed up in his own area or deep into his opponent's area. This is a lot similar to Mitchell Trubisky. Don't get PTSD, anybody who's not a Mitchell Trubisky fan, but you know, Mitchell Trubisky had the same issues at North Carolina when you watched his tape. And J.J. McCarthy at times tries to play hero ball, doesn't throw the ball away in those scenarios where he should, doesn't read the linebacker drops as well as he should, or where safeties are located or defenders are on the back hip, and misses some of those plays. At the same time, he reads leverage in certain situations, and you go, that was an excellent throw. That was an NFL caliber starter, Pro Bowl caliber play that you just made. And I like the fact that he doesn't usually invite pressure. Sometimes he'll peek outside, get back in and climb, and he does a good job to get away with that oops thing that Drake May does not get away with. But he may not get away with that as much in the NFL, but I love his feet. I love that he's willing to make some of the daring plays, because you need that in the NFL. You need to know, you need to sometimes, make those types of plays and go outside the scheme to do it. It's just, I think he's that guy that he projects more like a Jake Plummer to me, in the way of, like, think of Jake Plummer at his best, when he was with Denver and he had the team behind him. He's got great footwork, quick arm, can really attack you in the play action game. And that's the other thing. I didn't see a lot in the vertical game. And when you grade a player, the difficult part for me was, you can watch workouts and see what he does on pro day, but until you actually see a legitimate game, you see enough of these looks in 28 yards and beyond. I didn't see enough, and I don't even need a lot to judge accuracy in that range. But I still didn't even get that minimum after watching like 8 to 10 games and charting it. I didn't feel comfortable saying whether he's going to be good or not with his vertical skills. So when you combine those things I mentioned, that made it difficult. It's like, he's either a guy who this year gets, if he lands on a good team, I'm totally okay with the idea of projecting that he'll survive his first year and make good enough plays that people will be excited about him, and they won't be whining about him like Bryce Young and feeling like he's over before it even began, which I don't think is true. Or he could be the next Zach Wilson if he winds up on a team like the Jets or the Washington Commanders, if their offensive line isn't good enough and he gets pressured a lot and he gets regressed into bad habits. I could see either end of the spectrum, but it's going to be somewhere in between. And that in-between area means let's wait till next year to see how he continues to grow.
Got two more for you, Matt. And by the way, Jordan, thanks you for your very thoughtful analysis. J2K has another one. He wants to know about Ben Sinnott. Where do you think he will go in the draft? He's a big fan. He's got him ranked as his number two tight end. And by the way, Danny Shimon also has him ranked as his number two tight end. What are your thoughts on the tight end from Kansas State?
Well, let's make it 3 for 3 right now. For Frog. Okay. So, because he's my number two as well. He's also Chad Ryder's number two. And I remember Chad mocked him. He mentioned to me off air that he mocked him as a top 50 pick. And I asked him, what did he think? And he said, I don't care. He's like, and I laughed. I was like, I like that answer. But honestly, wherever he goes, I think there's a good chance that he will go that high, mainly because teams are going to look at Sam Laporta and they're going to realize that, you know, they're always looking for move tight ends early. The Bill Belichick, you know, philosophy that has kind of bled over for other teams is you can get blocking tight ends later. There are no, you know, Rob Gronkowski's out there. They're unicorns. And if they are out there, they're even more unicornish if they actually stay healthy for 3 out of 5 years, because it's such a demanding position to do that. You know, Cole Kmet might be the closest thing to that. And while, you know, good for Cole that he got his second contract and we're rooting for him, he's, you know, no one's going to mistake him for Rob Gronkowski. So when we look at Sano, he could be mistaken for Sam Laporta in the sense that he is a decent route runner, not as good as Laporta, but he is as good of a pass catcher. He is probably better in the open field than Laporta, and Laporta was very good. Sano has better contact balance. He and good feet in the way that Laporta has it, and those good feet carry over to the route running. And he's a good, you know, backside blocker, move tight end who can play fullback, H back, give you double teams, work in those areas of the game. So if you want to use a player in that type of way, I think that he would be an early pick for some teams. I think Miami would do very well to have him. I think the Bears, I don't know if the Bears are really philosophically aligned to get a guy like him. While it'd be fun, he might be that gadget that gets lost in the couch because the offense has too many players to focus on in a way that they might not be able to manage. But I'd say, like in Miami, that people might say the same thing, but there's some players that are aging. And Jonnu Smith is kind of like a poor man Sano, and in the way of like good after the catch, strong, can give you that ability. He doesn't catch the ball as well. Maybe wasn't quite as good of a route runner coming out as Sano is. But you could see how Sano could work behind Smith early and get some situational playing time and grow into it quickly. You know, well, I would say I love what John says. And that's true from a route running standpoint, but from a blocking standpoint, Rob Gronkowski could block defensive ends and strong side linebackers and 3-4 linebackers one-on-one. Go ask Sam Laporta if he can do that, and he will tell you that's not my role. You know, I'll do it if I have to. He'll give you all the great answers to say, but the translation is, hell no, I can't do that like Gronkowski. And he knows it, and that's okay.
Yeah. I got one more for you, and I'd love for you and Danny to talk about this player. Matt, where do you rank wide receiver Brian Thomas Jr. from LSU? And that's from Vizzo Joe. Thanks, Vizzo.
Sure. He's fifth on my board right now. And he's a guy that I think can be an instant starter if really needed to be in certain situations. He's probably forecasted more as a split end. But he could give you some flanker skills too as his route game continues to improve, because he's good after the catch. He's someone that runs sharper routes than I think some people give him credit for. He has the ability to continue. The problem is that people look at consistency, and it's hard to judge how other evaluators view what's consistent or not, you know, and how specific they are at looking at it. One person may look at his routes and say, well, I saw some sloppy routes or sloppy breaks at the top of his stem, or turns that weren't flat enough, or they didn't drop his weight well enough in certain scenarios, and they didn't specify which, and maybe they don't prioritize how they grade that to say whether it's good or not. And that's fair. You know, that's the tough part about scouting. For me, I thought he was a little less consistent in the deep intermediate game when it came to some of those routes, especially dropping his weight or maybe making that drive step and line step. But I saw enough in the short area of the game, and with the speed of those routes, and also as a runner after the catch when he's at full speed, that I could see that he's just got to practice it. It's not like he can't do it. It's not like he has no bend, like he's Kelvin Benjamin with no bend, or Chase Claypool with Claypool's got bend. It's other things that Chase and Claypool had going on. But that's the thing. I think Thomas has that developmental potential to be a starter, and at the very least, a really strong number two. What the Bills thought they had in Gabe Davis, maybe after year one and or in the playoffs of year two, or Bills fans thought they had, not the Bills. Bills knew what they had. They had a good number three receiver. I think Brian Thomas is what fans thought Gabriel Davis could be for them and are now glad that maybe he's somewhere else.
Yeah, for me, he's number four right now, receiver as well. And I was jockeying between him and Keon Coleman at four and five. Coleman comes in at five, and mainly because of, and I love Keon Coleman, but that 4.6, 140, which is not what he plays at on tape. I know he plays it more in a 4.5 range, but I just went with that because of Thomas gives you that big play potential. You talked about a big frame, 6'4", you know, 200 plus pounds, and one's a 4.3, 940, gives you some of that deep vertical speed that the guys like Coleman will give you some speed, but not, you know, he'll be more of a target in the middle. And I think both are more are developing still. I think they haven't hit their peak yet, but I just think that the big play explosiveness that Brian Thomas gives on offense is why I kind of put him right ahead of Keon Coleman. But they're right there for me, both of them. Dude. The one thing with Coleman, and I don't know if you
see good. I wanted you to talk more about Coleman. I was going to ask if you would, because I like him too.
Love him. Yeah, I love him. I think about Thomas, I don't know if this bothers you too, Matt, is he's got hands. He's got good hands. But there's times he always allows the ball to bounce off his chest and then bounces on you and it's incompletion. Like, dude, you got good hands. Just complete the catch with your hands. And that's something, again, young guy, I think he's going to develop and get better as time goes along. But, yeah, those two guys, I'm telling you, this is a loaded receiver draft. And I'm just like everybody, guys in the third round are going to come in and be third or fourth round are going to be impact players in this class, I believe.
That's very possible, for sure. You know, we always have kind of an attrition thing where maybe work ethic or maturity causes these guys, once they're challenged in the league, that to not know how to work or don't think they have to. And then the near career death experience happens, and then they suddenly either get their work together or not. But I love Keon Coleman myself here, and I wanted to talk about him when you mentioned him, because I've been talking about him a lot, Jordan. So whether people like it or not, but I'm glad it's friendly, because I wanted to hear somebody else talk about him who liked him as well. Because to me, I only have him a little bit lower. I think I have him sixth on my board. And the only reason that is that I could, the scenario that I could see where he struggles to be what he could be, and I still think what he, even in that scenario, he's still like a good number three receiver for a team that will be productive. Where he could struggle is if he's with a quarterback who is not a anticipation thrower, especially not to secondary routes. You know, like if he were a team with Joe Burrow, where Burrow comes off Jordan Chase as his primary, or Jamar Chase as his primary read, and hits Keon Coleman right away at the top of his stem, Coleman's got that separation early. He gets early separation frequently with his quickness, his acceleration, and his ability to run a good route and use his hands and feet effectively to get that separation. The problem comes if he's with a see it, throw it guy who's a beat or two late, waiting for college level confirmation for the receiver to be open, which means 2 to 3 steps. And then that becomes a scenario where the defender's going to recover, and either the quarterback's not going to have the confidence to fit it in there, which Coleman could still make the catch, or he's just going to end up throwing it in a bad position and way too late, and then, you know, it's taken out. But what I love is, even whether you want to debate his long speed or not, you know, is what he does after the catch. I mean, everyone who's ever watched him understands he's a punt returner. Mm-hmm. And punt returners are efficient. They know how to move. They're fearless. They understand how to use their feet. And they're the best players at being able to react to situations in tight traffic and efficiently use their feet. I mean, that and kick returners are good that way too. But like, I call them the LeGarrette Blount of wide receivers, in the sense that everybody wrote off LeGarrette Blount because they didn't like the speed. But he was super quick, and he was explosive in tight space and really efficient and dynamic as a mover. And they used him on kick returns. And, you know, he was a very good running back. And if you're a fantasy player, it was always the joke that LeGarrette Blount was the guy that you drafted after the 10th or 11th round in a fantasy draft every year while he was in New England, because there was at least a 6 to 8 week stint, if not for the entire year, that he was going to give you top tier production. And I think Keon Coleman's the type of guy that, you know, if the speed's not there, he's still going to give you, I think, what Kelvin Benjamin a Kelvin Benjamin plus type of player, like a more full-fledged route runner, maybe a faster Plexico Burris type, a T. Higgins type, you know?
Yep. Yeah, T. Higgins is a good comp.
Yeah, and if he's faster than that, which I think we both think he is, maybe he's a low-rent Anquan Boldin who could gain a little bit more in real estate value as his game continues to grow.
Matt, there used to be a TV show here in Chicago in the 60s and 70s hosted by Irv Kupson. It was called Kup. And he would always describe the show as his he and his guests engaging in the lively art of conversation. I want to thank you. I'm going to borrow his phrase and say thank you for engaging in the lively art of player evaluation with Danny and everyone in the chat room. You've gotten so many compliments in the chat room for your work and for your appearance here today. Tell people how they can thank you by following you on X and your websites and so forth.
Sure. You know, first, if you want to get the Rookie Scouting Portfolio, which again, 19-year-old publication, is one of the two most purchased draft guides by NFL people who are looking to cross-check their work, according to folks like recruiter at Ole Miss, Alex Brown, who was the head of recruiting at SMU. And also, you know, people like Will Hewlett, who, you know, has used my work to get prepped and work with guys like Brock Purdy and Anthony Richardson, and now Caleb Williams, as well as Jordan Travis and other guys that he has in his stable. You know, you can get it at mattwaldman.com. It's $21.95. And it's you get a pre-draft and a post-draft. Post-draft's more fantasy-oriented. Pre-draft has more shelf life, if you ask me. You'll be overloaded with fun information that's kind of choose your own draft adventure. You can find my YouTube channel at Matt Waldman's RSP Film Room, where you'll see channels there for my podcast as well as my film breakdowns. It has, I think, nearly 800 videos at this point, because I've been doing it for a long time. And nice. Matt Waldman on Twitter or X, whatever you call it. I do a lot of video breakdowns there too, and you see my stuff going on from that standpoint. So, you know, if you liked what you saw, you can do that. And at mattwaldman.com, where you get the publication, I'll just add that I do donate to a good cause. I've donated over $65,000. It'll be over $70,000 this year to Darkness to Light, an organization devoted to preventing sexual abuse of children through educational programs. They've worked with Michigan State and Penn State. They work with individuals, government organizations, community groups on how to help them identify grooming behaviors so that these things don't happen, better hiring practices and training practices, as well as how to deal with the situation when it is reported so they don't compound the trauma of the victims, and they know how to handle it right. And in that way, most importantly to the victims and also long-term for their organizations, because even though these organizations like Penn State and Michigan State were probably ignorantly thinking that, you know, I don't know what they were thinking, but, you know, long-term, they probably had some logic that they hoped they were doing the right thing on some level when they really weren't and learned the hard way. So d2l.org is where you can find out more about them. And I donate up to $5,000 to them. And again, you know, thanks for you guys having me on and giving me the opportunity to talk about that.
Well, thanks for your player evaluation and especially for sharing that information about the charity work and that great organization that you're working with. Matt, we'll be following your work and maybe down the line post-draft, we'll have you on a future show so that you can hopefully give the Bears draft an A+, okay?
Sounds fun. Good luck tomorrow. May Ryan Poles get some good sleep and not trip and fall, and enjoy getting yourselves an excellent young quarterback.
Thanks, Matt. Good. It was fun.
Absolutely, Danny. It was a blast, man. Appreciate your work.
Thank you.
Thank you. What a great guy. What a great, great guy. Huh?
Talk about detailed, in-depth breakdown. And you know, that's the thing to talk about, charting. That's what we do. We scout tapes. You know, watch quarterbacks, especially chart the plurals. You know, are they throwing it to the leverage of the receiver? Are they throwing it behind the receiver? Does it make the receiver work for the ball? You know, that's the things you look at. And it's some of the things that Matt just kind of eloquently kind of put out there and explained to our listeners. That was awesome.
Yeah, indeed. Well, you know, one of the things that I truly, truly love about this show is these interviews that you conduct with our guests. And I'm looking to, you know, I'm hoping that we can even expand on that next season when we do the show again, Draft on Tap, if God willing. And, you know, and also one of my favorite aspects of this show is the Q&A that you have with our audience. I promised people weeks ago that I was going to collect some of the questions that were in the chat and we didn't have an opportunity to go to. Now, some of these players we have talked about over the course of our shows. But I thought it would be fun still to revisit those questions and also to answer the questions today as we are less than 24 hours away from draft time. So let me start with the questions that came in today. Let's see. Danny, by the way, Vizzo Joe gives you a great compliment. Danny, you've been awesome, brother. Great work. Cornelius has a very interesting question regarding the backup quarterback situation, because frankly, it's one that I'm a little bit concerned about. I have high expectations for Tyson Bagent, but having a second year player from a Division 40 school like Bagent was, it might not be the smartest thing to do in Caleb Williams' rookie season. So Cornelius asks, should the Bears bring in Ryan Tannehill?
Cornelius, I think I may have asked this question, or if not you, someone else asked this question previously, and I think Tannehill to me is not a guy that I would want to bring in, and this is the reason why. Now, he is a good veteran quarterback, and obviously if something happens to your starter, he's a guy you'd be comfortable plugging in and playing there. But for me, I'm looking for a more of a mentor guy, and I think Tannehill would think that he could still play. I think he would want to go somewhere where he could possibly challenge to be a starter. So I'm not sure where Ryan Tannehill is right now in his career. So I'm not sure if that would work out, that guy per se. But I do think you should bring a veteran guy that, you know, it's funny because, you know, Nate Peterman like always stuck around here, right? And then when I find out that Nate Peterman was actually working out with Caleb Williams down in Florida, I'm like, oh, perfect. You'll bring in Nate Peterman as his vet guy. And then all of a sudden, Nate Peterman signs with the Saints. So he's not an option anymore. So I threw this around a couple of times and I said, you know, could there be another veteran quarterback on the market that could come free after the draft? Sure, that could be a possibility there. But the other thing is the Thomas Brown role. I mean, the passing game coordinator, I think this is a position that the Bears created new for him. I don't recall them having a passing game coordinator in previous coaching cycles. So this is something that I think he's a guy that's going to play a role here with you know, kind of being the sounding board and kind of being that go-to guy for Caleb Williams. Now, I know Thomas Brown hasn't played quarterback, but I think he's, you know, being in this system, being with Sean McVay, obviously the Shane Waldron system is going to be similar to McVay's system. I think that's going to be the sounding board. But I would also keep an eye out and see what happens post-draft. Like I mentioned multiple times, there's going to be another wave of free agency guys. Once the draft is done with, once they brought in their unsigned free agents, so on and so forth, team's going to go through and see, all right, who's on our salary, on our team, on our roster, that we can kind of dump this salary. And I think you'll see a lot of June 1st cuts. And if a veteran does come free, I wouldn't put it past Ryan Poles and company to go and bring him in and be that tutor or that sounding board for Caleb Williams.
Brandon adds to that, so he concurs with your opinion, but he asks about Blaine Gabbert.
Gabbert is an interesting guy. Obviously, a high pick, had fell on hard times. He's been with some good quarterbacks, namely Tom Brady. So he's backed them up. So he's had some experience. That would be a guy that I could think more of, probably more willing to come in here and be that veteran kind of sounding board and kind of mentor for Caleb Williams. So, that's a good name there, Brandon. But I think Blaine Gabbert probably be a better option than say a Ryan Tannehill. I think Tannehill is kind of still out there saying, hey, listen, I can still play in this league. I think Gabbert's kind of accepted his role and he knows that what he is right now.
Yeah. And I agree with Vince here. The Bears, all indications point to the fact that they really, really love Tyson Bagent and his potential. And this
veteran wouldn't be that number two quarterback. It would be like a number three quarterback, kind of like the practice squad guy, that guy's in the room that kind of gives him that leadership and all that stuff. And I think Bagent, I've heard good things about him. I think I've heard somewhere he put on like 20 pounds of muscle. He's got bulked up a little bit, got a little stronger. So, I mean, obviously that was one of the things with him last year when he came out, was his inability actually to get the ball deep and accurately. I think that's something he's going to work on as well. So, yeah, I think Bajan as the backup is suffice. If he needs to step in, I think he could play. But we're just talking about like a veteran in the room to be like a sounding board for two basically, you know, first and second year players.
Yeah, and I've got a Ryan Tannehill bias, and I know this is very superficial, but when he was on Hard Knocks, they started talking about where the sun rises, and he didn't know that if it rose in the east.
That was Jared Goff.
Was that Jared Goff? That's why I hate him too. Take that down, Burr.
Jared Goff. We didn't know that where the sun rose and where the sun.
Oh yep. My God! I confused those two. They're both bad quarterbacks, but
He went to Cal. Like, how does this guy go to Cal and not know where the sun rose and stuff? Unbelievable.
All right, let's get to another one here. Travis asked Danny if two of the top wideouts are still on the board. Are you taking one or are you taking an edge? And you've alluded to this in previous shows and also earlier in this show. Give us some more on your thinking here.
Yeah, for me, guys, it's Marvin Harrison number one and Roman Dunze number two. If either one of those two guys are available, I'm going receiver. If it's Malik Nabers and say an edge guy, I'm seeing what if I can trade down. If I can't trade down, if I'm stuck there, I'm taking the best offensive lineman. I'm not saying that Malik Nabers is not a great player or potentially a great player. There are certain things in this game that I'm just not a big fan of, and I just don't think that if that's something that the Bears could go ahead and delve into. And again, this is a deeper draft in terms of the receiver class. I would prefer if they're going to get a partner to trade down and recoup some picks and get some receivers later on in the draft. I still feel the Bears need two receivers, not just one, two. So even if they get Roma Dunze, you know, I know they're going to be limited in terms of, you know, draft capital. So maybe they'll go out in the free agent market after the draft and begin another receiver. But, you know, I do, for me, that there's a big difference between Marvin Harrison, Roma Dunze, and Malik Nabers. For me, I know across the league, across the board, they're all kind of mixing together, all three of them. But there's a big gap for me. And especially filling in with this offense, with this quarterback, with the type of receivers they already have on this roster, it's Marvin Harrison, Roman Dunze. If those two guys are available somehow, some way, I pick one and I'm happy and I go on to my next pick.
Yeah, and Cliff says that he thinks there's going to be around a dozen edge guys who should be released in the preseason right after the draft. As you know, Danny, there's a reset in terms of players who are kept and released. It depends on, you know, who they draft and so forth. So there could be some interesting names that you and I will talk about sometime after the draft, after we've gotten some rest.
Yeah, because we know they're not going to be able to fill all their needs. But if they stay with four picks, and I truly do believe he's going to go in four picks. And I think he's going to take the two guys in the top 10. And I think, again, we just like the scenario. If Dunze is there, I think he's going to take him and go home happy. But if he does trade down, which I think is very, very minimal, that opportunity, I think he's going to go with four picks. And then now, you know, next two are third and fourth round. Now you're going to look for guys that can come in and contribute. And I'm assuming I'm hoping those guys are going to be on the defensive line, on the defensive front. So we'll see who's available there when their turn comes up in that third and fourth round pick.
Yeah. We've learned of your opinion about Brock Bowers, but I want to ask, you know, kind of a compilation question because his name has come up a lot in the chat today. Do you think that Waldron, with his love of using two tight ends, might be pounding the desk, you know, and the table at the draft room saying, you know, the top three wide receivers are gone. Give me Brock Bowers because he's a hybrid player. He's a tight end slash wide receiver that can be so creative with him and will have him for a long time. What are your thoughts about maybe that being the surprise of the draft and the Bears either with number nine or trading down a bit and acquiring Brock Bowers?
If they hadn't gotten Gerald Everett, I'd say, all right, maybe Brock, if they trade down, Brock Bowers could be someone that they could target. But, you know, from everything we hear now, you know, he's you know, targeted to go to New York to be Aaron Rodgers' quarterback. A tight end off there. So the thing with Brock Bowers is what would he fit, right? You already have two tight ends here on his roster. You're bringing him. Him and Gerald Everett are kind of similar players, right? And you if anything, you'd want another blocking tight end. So if you go three, you know, three tight end sets, or if you want, you know, another player, you know, you're gonna have guys that can stand at the you know, get his hands on the ground and at the offensive line and be a force there, or at least help, you know, block. And I just don't think that's Bauer's strength. Bauer's strength is is being basically like a big receiver and being like a George Kittle, who's a lot of comps are famous for a George Kittle type. But Kittle is a pretty damn good inline blocker as well. And Brower's, that's not his game yet, right? So for me, it will just be, you know, duplicating what you have, a little bit better of a prospect than Joe Everett, but still, he's a move, you know, tight end, a guy that's going to be predominantly a pass catcher. I just don't think, and with the needs you have here at receiver, at defense, on defensive line, I just think Brock Bowers is more of a luxury pick than actually, you know, something that you would actually need. So I just don't see that being a fit here for Chicago, you know, at this time.
Okay. Cliff has an interesting question here. Is talking about blue chip players, who are in your mind, who are the 7, 8, 9, whatever blue chip players that you have in this draft? Guys that no matter, you know, where you're picking or what you have already on the roster, you're saying to yourself, gotta get them. This guy's a blue chip player. We'll add depth to that position. Well, you know, who was it that said recently? I forgot. The general manager of the some team, he said, you know, I was recalling the story about Aaron Donald, and he was drafted by Les Snead, I think is his name, the general manager of the Rams back in 2013-14. And he said, we want to make the strong part of our team, which at the time they had Robert Quinn and Chris Long and Brock Bowers on the defensive line. He said, we want to make the strong even stronger, which is why they selected Aaron Donald. And then I started crying because the Bears had the next pick and I wanted Donald. So who are your blue chip players that you say, all right, the guy's available. This is an easy pick.
Well, for me, if we can go position by position, or we can just go, you know, top of my top 100. But like, you know, Marvin Harrison Jr. and Roman Dunes after me are blue chip players. Joe Alt, offensive lineman, blue chip player. I believe, you know, J.C. Latham, and I believe Fuanga will be blue chip players as well. But when it's all said and done, in terms of defensive players, I think Jared Verse at edge is going to be a blue chip player. I like Dallas Turner's potential. He's a first rounder, but I don't know if he's going to be he's got potential to be a blue chip player. And Laiatu, he's a guy that to me, I absolutely love, but right now he's just a one trick pony. Right. And then he's a terrific pass rusher. He's going to be a guy who's going to be going after the quarterback. Is he going to be a full, you know, a complement defensive end? He's going to be considered a blue chip player. Those are some of my guys. Let's see, corner. I think Quinion Mitchell is a blue chip player. I think Terron Arnold from Alabama is a blue chip player. You know, so there's a number of these guys that I going up and down the roster here, but you know, these are some of the names. I think Byron Murphy from Texas, I think he's got an opportunity to be a blue chip player. I think he's going to be a better interior pass rusher, a guy that gets up into the gaps and penetrates at the next level better than what he did at Texas, where he has to do a lot more two gapping. So for me, it's the receivers and offensive tackles right now, and obviously the couple of quarterbacks with Caleb and Jaden Daniels, I think are blue chip players. Drake May's right on the cusp there as well. There's things I love about Drake May. There's other things that I don't like about Drake May as well. So you know, so some of the guys that are first rounders are not necessarily blue chip players, but they have first round grades. But the ones I just kind of rattled off, those are in my opinion my blue chip players.
Excellent. And Cliff has asked if you've got a blue chip list. We'll compile those names, Cliff, and hopefully you'll join us tomorrow for our round one draft coverage. I had a meeting with John Buffon, Danny Shimon, and Jordan Silvera just prior to this show, and we've got a fantastic production for you guys, for Bears fans, for even just plain NFL lovers. I think we're going to really deliver a high quality product. So hopefully you'll join us for that. I know there's a lot of podcasters and webcasters out there who are going to be covering day one. I would love it if you would at least taste what we're doing tomorrow, because I think it'll be well worth your time. All right. Some other questions here. Vince says, I'm sure Mr. Shimon. When was the last time you were called Mr. Shimon, Danny?
Well, I don't know, actually. and Matt mentioned I have some grays in my beard, so I know I feel I got to go shave, man. I got to feel like old now.
I was surprised he said that. I'm like going, what? I don't see any gray,
bro. I'm like, man, I go high and tight, man. I'm trying not to get the grays up, man.
Tell me about it. No longer works for me. Vince says, I'm sure Mr. Shimon has answered this a million times, but I want another offensive lineman. Is there an offensive lineman or two he'd take above Odunze if both Odunze and his top one or two linemen are there? Beef up that line, says Vince.
Wow. I mean, that's a good question, Vince. I mean, and there are some players that I love, right? And in terms of offensive line, I love JC Latham at right tackle. I love Talese Fuaga at right tackle slash right guard from Oregon State. I mean, I think both those guys are maulers. These are guys that you plug and play here at the offensive line, and they can take this offensive line and really solidify it, right? I've talked multiple times. If you take, for example, if you draft a JC Latham, plug him in on right tackle, you kick Darnell right over to right guard, or vice versa. If you take Fuaga, you keep Darnell right at right guard, you kick Fuaga keep Darnell right at right tackle, kick Fuaga into right guard. You got two SOBs that mean that are going to be able to, you know, pave the way for the run game moving forward. And I love those guys. But in terms of Rome Odunze, see, again, I'm going to release my top 100. You'll see it tomorrow if you join us for the draft show. See my top 100. My top player is Marvin Harrison Jr. My number two player is Rome Odunze. That's how much I love Rome Odunze. I mean, he's right up there on par with Marvin Harrison. You talked about with Matt earlier. You know, his comp for him was Davante Adams, which is my comp for Rome Odunze as well. So imagine getting that type of a receiver play potentially from a ninth overall pick. And I think that's how much I love this kid. And the ability to bring him on with Caleb Williams. So, by the way, they've already apparently, formed some sort of friendship. They were both on the same flight to Detroit together. You know, they're taking pictures. They were talking about them joining up, in the combine. And I guess he was already throwing some passes to him. So I love that mixture there. And just to see him kind of grow with Caleb, obviously with DJ Moore. We talked about, Keenan Allen to me is a rental, is a one-year player. You know, even if he has a great year, I don't know if I can commit long-term money to a Keenan Allen who I've mentioned multiple times here, has missed 11 games in the last 2 years combined. So I think that by that combination of Rome Odunze and DJ Moore, and then obviously with Cole Kmet and whoever else, now you start forming an offense with Caleb. I think that's a attractive combination that I can't foresee bypassing. We talked about it with Matt, in terms of Aaron Rodgers and Roma, Davante Adams having that connection where Aaron would throw it to a spot. Davante Adams had the ability to kind of contour his body with the body control on back shoulder plays. That's the kind of bond and connection I see developing here potentially with Caleb and Rome Odunze. And I just don't want to bypass that. That's why I said, make it simple. Don't overthink it. If you get Caleb one, number one, Odunze there, number nine, that's a big question now. Now there's talk about it. He might even be there at number nine. And then that's a whole different conversation right there. But if he's there at nine, don't overthink it. Go make the pick and put those two together and just watch what's that going to happen offensively.
Iceberg says, who needs Mel Kiper when we have Danny?
Mel Kiper was my idol growing up. I spent weekends, watching Mel Kiper on ESPN, and that's who I wanted to become. I wanted to become that. I wanted to work in the league and all that stuff. So, yeah, I'm Mel Kiper. Shout out to the Godfather there.
There you go. Vince says you still got a little bit more to catch up to the goal game.
I agree. I'm not that one either.
And so now we're going to go back in time to some of the questions that I found from previous shows that we did not have time to answer. And so, Vince, you're up first. And the very, very first show, you asked Danny the question about please evaluate Drake May. So I'm going to update your question a little bit because Danny's already talked about Drake May and his evaluation, but I'd like to get his updated thoughts on Drake May and where he might go in the draft, because there's talk about him going number two, about potentially a team like today on ESPN, there was news about the Giants potentially trading up to grab Drake May. And so what is your evaluation of Drake May, and where do you think he's going to end up, Danny?
Yeah, for me, obviously, Drake May came into the season, him and Caleb. That was the talk, one and two. Who's going to go number one? Is it Drake or is it Caleb? And as the season went along, and obviously, the both players struggled, throughout the year. But just breaking down Drake's tape here, he's called QB number three. And tomorrow, my partner, Jordan Silvero, will be out there, and he has Drake May as number one on his in terms of his quarterback. So we can discuss that tomorrow when Jordan's on. But for me, it's there's things with Drake that you love. I love the size, 6'4", 223. That's the prototypical size quarterbacks that I want. I want those big guys, sturdy. he's athletic. He's not just a statue in the pocket. He's a guy that can you know, take off and use his feet. And he's not a Jaden Daniels or a Caleb Williams in terms of making, you know, ripping off, you know, 20, 30, 40 yard runs. But he's a guy that can extend drives and get first downs, and he's tough as nails. The kid will stand there and take a beating. But what when you break down, you know, Drake's this year in terms of some of his you know, negatives, it's, you know, the footwork was all over the place at times. His accuracy was not, and that could probably be aligned with his footwork, right? You know, I know he lost, you know, Josh Downs, his leading receiver to the Colts last year in the NFL, lost a couple of offensive linemen to the NFL as well. So that could have affected. There was a new offensive coordinator brought in by North Carolina, so that was a little bit different for him as well. So you could see some of the step back or regression in stats and numbers, but the play, the decision making to me was a little bit erratic all over the place. I mean, I was watching him against I believe it was against Notre Dame, and it was against Minnesota, where he just literally threw the ball. It was within the 25 yard line, and he threw the ball to the outside linebacker. And I'm like, where are you throwing? What are you seeing here? And there are things like that on his tape that really kind of bugged me and bothered me. I just didn't have answers for those things, right? So I think he's and Mr. Fact, he's not Mitch Trubisky. Let's just put it that way, right? I mean, let's get that out. I know he went to the same school. I know we're all, and Matt dropped a couple of names on us that really kind of gave us some flashbacks there with Trubisky and Claypool. So names we're trying to forget here, but yes. But he's not Trubisky, guys. So let's be fair to the kid. This kid is a very good, you know, very high talent, you know, quarterback coming out of high school. He's a guy that actually, you know, has been starting for the last 2 years. You know, Trubisky couldn't beat out an undrafted free agent at North Carolina until that kid graduated, right? And that's when Trubisky got the start. So, but this kid's got talented arm. He's got some all things. Like, he's got to tell in terms of, like, he pets the ball when he wants to, when he tries to get the ball out quicker. So there's things he's got to work on. But these are not things that you say, all right, this guy is not going to make it. This is you know, the talent is there. And the size talked about can make all the NFL-type throws. You know, solid pocket awareness, but there's things he needs to be coached up. And then one thing I wish for Drake May is he goes to a team that would allow him to sit. And we always talk about these young quarterbacks going to teams and sitting, and eventually they always get thrust into it, right? Anthony Richardson, we were talking about last year. This guy is not ready, but he's got the body, and he's got the tool set to be a heck of a quarterback. Heck, he was starting week one for the Colts, right? So that's the thing. It's like, but I do wish he goes to a team that has an established starter. So I think New England is a good spot for him because they have Jacoby Brissett, who's a respected veteran who'll start, you know, first, you know, 6, 7, 8 game, maybe the whole season, and allow Drake May to kind of sit there and just kind of work on some of the mechanics, work on some of the, you know, Matt talked about it also in his interview, and it's that these, you know, quarterback coaches and all that stuff, they work on these mechanics, they work on the footwork and all that stuff, and just let him get comfortable with the speed at the NFL level. I do think Drake May is going to be a solid to a good quarterback, but in terms of, you know, when I go in my rankings and kind of break down the tape, there's a clear difference, at least for me there is, and Jordan can talk about this tomorrow, but there's a clear difference for me between Caleb, Jaden Daniels, and Drake May, and that's why he comes in third for me.
Okay, good stuff, Danny. Eagle Bean, and this was 2 months ago, he asked about Keon Coleman, and you said earlier that he was number four on your list. Actually, this is
number five.
Number five. I'm sorry. Yes, behind Brian Thomas Jr. So you've evaluated him already on this show, but tell me why you have him ahead of Xavier Leggett, Brandon Rice, Adonai Mitchell, Xavier Worthy, and Jalen Polk, who round out your second half of the top 10.
Well, the thing with Keon Coleman is first of all, 6'3", 210. This guy is just a physical beast, right? He transferred from Michigan State to Florida State. And he's a guy that for me, just his quickness off the line for a guy that big, that, you know, that strong is pretty good. And I think he's a guy that can beat press coverage, whether it's with his size or with his quickness off the line of scrimmage. He ran a 4.6 140 at the combine, which to me is not what he runs on tape. You know, he's more of like a 4.5. I'm not saying he's a 4.4 guy, but he's a 4.5, you know, or, you know, high 4.5, low 4.5 guy. So he's a guy, and then watch him get down the field and make the plays. And I love guys that can make contested catches down the field with you know, defensive backs draped over them. His ability to go ahead and pluck a ball out of the air and then take it the distance, put the LSU game on, caught a slant and went about, you know, 50, 60 yards for a touchdown. So I'm saying the speed at the combine doesn't match his game speed. And I think that size at 6'3", 210, physical specimen with that ability to make, you know, contested catches and the body control and the long arms, the big catch radius downfield. I think that's a guy that can develop into a really solid X receiver. Now, I don't know, can he ever be a number one receiver? Time will tell. But I think that frame, and he's a young player. It's only a third year player, a junior. And again, this guy was a punt returner, as we talked about with Matt. So he's got some of those open field moves. He's not as nimble as some of the others, like Xavier Worthy or anything like that. But I'm telling you, his size with the combination of his catch radius and his big play potential. I think I've been talking about Keon Coleman throughout the football season, guys. You could hear me mention his name here and there. I absolutely love this kid. And like I said, what I was talking to Matt there, just that speed element in terms of Brian Thomas brought some of that bigger play potential downfield threat. While you see it on Keon Coleman's tape, I just want – and right, hands, by the way, Keon Coleman, only two drops the entire season. So he's got sure hands as well. So it gives you that. So, but going back to Brian Thomas, a little bit more big play, vertical stretch kind of guy. And then Keon gives you, again, more of that in between some of the crossers and more of a physical play. Again, a guy catches the ball and turns up field quickly, uses that physicality to break some tackles and break some, get some yards after contact as well. So absolutely love Keon Coleman. It was very close between him and Brian Thomas for 4 and 5. But I think this guy's going to go, there's a possibility he might go at the bottom of that first round. Or he could very well going to go in a second round. I think he's going to make some team very happy. But he needs to go to a team that I feel has an established number one receiver. If you want a player comp, he's not as big as physical as this guy. But a kid like DK Metcalf in Seattle, that's the type of receiver I could see him eventually, kind of being that kind of role in an offense. A good, solid X receiver. DK might be a number one, but potentially Keon could be number one, but I see him more as selling in as a nice, good, solid number two.
Months ago, J2K asked about the offensive lineman from Illinois, Isaiah Adams.
I do. I leave it to J2K to find these diamonds in the rough here.
Exactly. He's very good at that.
Yep. I went in. I've done Isaiah Adams, and I have him right here. Let me pull up my scouting report real quick. Sorry about that.
Did you have him on your top 10 interior offensive linemen?
I do not. I do not have him on my top 10 interior. Nope, I do not, unfortunately.
We'll say that he's number 11 in your top 10.
Now I can't seem to find his scouting report. But basically, 6'4", I believe 300-plus pounds. He's a guy that playing at the University of Illinois, has played multiple spots, plays right tackles, plays left tackles, plays inside a guard. He's a guy that shows good, athletic ability in terms of moving laterally. Obviously, with this scheme, you're going to do a lot of zone blocking. Strength at the point of attack is not as great as strong suit there. He's got decent size, good length. But again, he's a guy that I think could come in and be a good backup interior offensive lineman. A guy can play multiple. I saw him play in one game. He's playing left guard. The right tackle gets hurt for Illinois. He swings over to plays right tackle for him as well. So I think gives you that kind of versatility. So initially, I think he comes in, he's going to be a backup and kind of back up multiple positions along the offensive line, get stronger and get developed. But he shows some good promise in terms of athletic ability, in terms of feet. Core strength's got to get better. He wasn't as dominating or as powerful at the point of attack that I want to see him at in terms of next level. So, but again, zone blocking, double teams, working with the center hand-to-hand, I think he did a solid job there as well. So Isaiah Adams is a guy that I think is going to make a roster, but I think he's initially going to be more of that multi-positional backup, gives you a lot of flexibility there on the offensive line.
You don't need your notes, man.
I was looking for them. I had them marked here somewhere.
Great recall. Another offensive lineman that you were asked about from my buddy Jimmy Kessel, Caden Wallace from Penn State, the big offensive lineman from Penn State. Not a lot of people talk about him.
Yeah, he was actually in my top 10 interior linemen. And Caden Wallace is a guy that came up from Penn State. Obviously, I watched him versus he was on my I thought he was in my top 10. He's on my did I find him a tackle? Let me see where I put him at. I thought he was in my top 10. Yeah. One second.
Let's see. That's the interior offensive lineman.
Oh, he's in my tackles. I'm sorry. He's in my offensive tackles. I apologize. Okay. Yeah, so Caden Wallace, right tackle for Penn State, a 4-star high school recruit, has got a track and field background. He's a 4-year starter at right tackle for Penn State, 40 career starts, so he's got that experience. For me, it's very good overall mass and arm length. It's 6'5", 314 pounds with 34-inch arms. When I was watching Olufashanu at left tackle, number 79, Keenan Wallace kept catching my eye, and then I saw him at the East-West Shrine Games as well. And I'm like, he really kept them, and in there, they kicked him inside the guard. So that's why he could be one of a tweeners and, guard slash tackles. But, I like him at right tackle, good point of attack strength in the run game, athletic enough to pull and lead through the hole, displays his 1.74 10-yard split and overall athleticism when he climbs to that second level and reaches those linebackers. Solid base, balance and knee bend and pass protection, shows ability to be able to ride speed rushers wide of the pocket. Good anchor strength and pass pro. And again, I have in my notes here, he really, for me at least, stood out in those East-West Shrine, practices. So, some of the negatives that you might, with Kalen is marginal agility and body control and change of direction. There are times where quickness and speed guys can really kind of stress him out. Pad level rises, more as he gets fatigued later on in the games. I saw a couple times where on his games where, fourth quarter, he's starting to kind of, have those mental lapses where his pad levels elevate. He loses leverage and he gets beat. And also, things like that, you kind of have to kind of coach him up and just, make sure you're on the kid there. Can't have trouble sustaining against quicker edge guys or second level players. Technique again deteriorates the further you ask him to get away from the middle of the football field. So that's why I think a lot of teams are seeing him as a guard, right? So was he as a tackle, the further away he gets from the ball, if you put him out on the island, if you will, I think that's where you see some of his weaknesses there, right? So I think that's why a lot of teams want to kick him inside the guard. But yeah, definitely a kid that I think goes day three and could come in and could play again multiple spots for you as a backup, but has a shot to be an interior offensive lineman at the next level, possibly even a right tackle.
Outstanding. Let's go to a question that was posed by Harry O. He wanted your thoughts on Javian Cohen, the guard out of Miami. And I got to tell you, when I talked with Emory Hunt, he was in love with this player. All right, do you have a similar affection for the guard out of Miami?
I don't know if I'm in love with the player, but he's a guy that really is a talented kid. I'm just trying to look through my notes here on Javian Cohen here real quick. Sorry about that.
No problem.
But definitely a guy as a highly decorated recruit. Let me just see if I can.
He did not make your top 10, so yeah, there's no love there.
No, he did not make my top 10, so I don't love him that much. But let me just pull up his stats here or his
how many notebooks have you gone through?
I have five notebooks. I've broken them out by offensive linemen, interior, offensive tackles. I got defensive linemen, I got quarterbacks, I got receivers, I got tight ends, I got running backs, I got safeties, I got cornerbacks. I got notebooks out my ass, guys. Sorry about that. All right. So Javian Cohen, a four-star high school recruit, 6'4", 324, 34-inch arms. Transfer from I was actually at Alabama. Transfer from Alabama in 2023. He's been a two-year starter for the Crimson Tide there for 25 starts there, left guard. Started all 12 games for Miami here, left guard. So a total, he's got 37 starts. So he's got some good experience there. For me, this is a guy that very good size and length, displays natural knee bend, plays with balance, has enough strength to hold his ground, can lean and seal when he has an angle and can out-leverage defenders. Surprisingly effective pulling and working to the second level for a guy 300-plus pounds. Solid grip strength once he locks in, get game, set, match, it's over. Confined pass pro blocker. For me, he's more of a guy that we used to call in the scouting world, he's a phone booth blocker, right? We don't have phone booths anymore, so that term is kind of out of whack there. But he's a guy that in a confined space is pretty good pass protection. Seems to like to be able to get in into the defender quickly post snap. And for me, he's a good gap scheme fit player. Okay. Negatives, adequate, point of attack power, should be more powerful than he is, in my opinion, for a guy what potentially shows that kind of strength, that lower body strength. Technique lapses, needs to play with more consistency in bend and leverage. Gets in trouble when his feet stall and is slow to shift his weight. Struggles to sustain or maintain pass protection blocks when facing quicker defenders. Lacks the quick change of direction, quickness, especially you'll see this at the next level, and second level, I should say, second level defenders. I think ran a pedestrian three cone, which was like an 8.28 three cone, which I can show some of that lack of quick change of direction. So for me, he's not a scheme fit here. First of all, he's a talented kid, but I think he's more of a going to be a guy that's going to be fit better looked upon playing inside on a more power based gap scheme system.
The same guy, Harry O, asked about the kid from Marshall, Ethan. Yep. Is it Ethan Driscoll? I think that's
Ethan Driscoll. I believe he was at the Senior Bowl. I think I saw him there for the first time. Big kid, 6'8", 313 pounds, long arms, 35 3/8". Played basketball predominantly growing up. So this is a guy that got a late start to football. Walked on at Marshall, actually. He's a guy that's battled injuries early on in his career. Had a torn labrum in 2021. He has had started 26 games in the last two seasons. And, you know, the one thing you put on his tape in YC is terrific size, obviously, you know, with those long arms and big hands. He's light on his feet. You know, again, former basketball player, and you see that agility, and you see that balance in his athletic frame. Lean frame, but he has yet room to grow, meaning he's got room to add some more good lean muscle mass on his body. You know, tries to run his feet on contact, which is, you like to see that. Athletic to fan the rush with all his moving parts, and is coordinated. You know, for me, he's more of a positional blocker. He's more of a guy that tries to stay in between the rusher and the quarterback than a guy that's a technician there. But again, we talked about his late start to football, so that could be something there where you look at there. So as developing, so he's more of a developmental guy for me. A guy that lacks the strength and the power at the point of attack to be any sort of a man mover or you know, a line of scrimmage reestablisher. So he's something where this is a guy I think goes late, you know, maybe seventh round, maybe even a part of your free agent. I'm not sure, but that size and that length, I think someone, and those feet, someone's going to draft him, I believe. And you just get him stronger, put him on your practice squad, and let him develop. But he's got the athletic ability, he's got the size and the length that you like. So I think someone's going to take a chance at him and just look to develop him, get him stronger.
Yeah, Dane Brugler said that he projects him as a fifth or sixth rounder and a guy that could potentially grow into being a quality swing tackle in the National Football League. J2K just offered up a question. Do you have any insight on the defensive end, Brennan Jackson?
Yeah, Brennan Jackson out of Washington State. He's a guy that I watched, I said this multiple times before, but he was number 80. And I'm like, was this guy a former tight end? I mean, because he's that athletic, you know, his good quick step quickness, you know, gets off the line of scrimmage, you know, has solid bend, not great bend. You know, he's a guy that I think has 7 sacks this past year. So he's been productive for Washington State, but also a guy that I think is right now is going to be a situational player, athletic as heck, has to deal with a lot of injuries in his career. So that's one concern you have to take a look at in terms of his medical background. He's missed a lot of games, you know, there, but intriguing edge guy. You know, is he a down and down on defensive end? I'm not sure, but could he come in and be a rotational guy? Could it be a situational pass rusher? I do think that you can do that. He's got good, you know, get off at the line of scrimmage. But definitely a guy that you can bring in and make it a part of your you know, defensive line. But still, I'm not sure if he can be a down and down out, you know, hand in the ground defensive end starter for you.
Excellent stuff, man. I think that takes care of all of our questions. Jordan added this thought. Brennan Jackson's a straight line player, but coaches will love him. He plays his heart out and is built well.
Mortar never stops on Brennan Jackson. That's the one.
Yeah. Sure. And Brugler has him also as a fifth or sixth rounder, so we'll see how that turns out. Tomorrow is our big day, and I will start with a short tease episode and also talk to Nick Baumgartner over at The Athletic. He's going to focus on the NFC North for us and tell us what the expectations are. And then at 7 p.m. Central, 8 Eastern, it's Danny, it's Jordan, it's Buffon. It's our Da Bears, the draft, a day one coverage, every pick. We're going to have some outstanding analysis, some really cool graphics for you to enjoy, and lots of information, trivia information, scouting evaluations, you name it, we'll have it. Danny, are you going to be depressed like on Sunday morning when the draft
actually,
is over?
I know you're joking, but there is a little bit of a, I don't know what the proper term is, but like a little bit of a letdown after the draft level, because, you know, we put so much time scouting these players and writing up reports and getting to know them, learn their backgrounds and all that stuff. And then talking to you guys and you know, giving you guys all the information that once it's done, it's kind of like, okay, it's done. Not what I do all this time, you know? And so there's a little bit of a, you know, a little bit of a thing, but no, I am looking forward to getting, you know, a nice vacation, going somewhere. And like I said, next time you see me, it will be or training camp, or it'll be we're running to a beach somewhere.
There you go. That's right. We run into each other. Yeah. I like that idea. Well, and, you know, I can't stress enough how important this draft is. You know, the theme of tomorrow night's show is the rebuild. And this could be the crowning piece in Ryan Poles' rebuild program. If he's going to go down in history as one of the greatest, or if the greatest Bears general manager, he's got to hit with his picks. Caleb Williams has to be the real deal. What he does with that second first-round pick, whether he's selecting a blue chipper or trading down for some high-quality red chippers, and those picks in round three or four, or maybe more selections, he's got to come up with some excellent depth pieces or potential starters and get this team into playoff contention. That's what's on the line tomorrow. And I can't think of a better crew of people. John Buffone, with his passion for the Chicago Bears, his uncle played 15 seasons for the Bears. And Jordan, while not a Bears fan, he brings outstanding knowledge of what's going on with all 32 teams in the NFL. And Danny and I really appreciate his scouting analysis. And of course, the burgeoning next Mel Kiper Jr., Danny Shimon, will be on hand. So that's going to be a lot of fun. Yeah,
it's going to be fun tomorrow. It's going to be exciting. I can't wait to see. Obviously, you know, I think we know what happens with Caleb. But the one thing I'm going to stress, guys, and you know, is just keep this in mind. You know, everyone's talked about Caleb as being this generational talent, all that stuff. And I hate that term. And I've talked about it. I don't like putting these kind of labels on these young players. But, you know, he's going to be a rookie. He's going to come in and there's going to be typical rookie struggle. So don't expect there to be a you know, automatic CJ Stroud kind of, you know, you know, performance. You know, could he put that out there? Sure. I'm not putting it again. You know, I'm not saying he can't do it, but let's just kind of temper the expectations. I've heard stuff like, will he be the first 4,000 yard passer in Bears history? Will he be the first guy to throw for over 30 touchdowns? Let's let this kid come in. I know he comes in with high expectations. And if you guys haven't seen it, do you go yourself a favor, watch the pivot interview that he does with Ryan Clark. And I think you get some more insight in terms of Caleb Williams and the person, right? And some of the stuff that I had been hearing prior to the season, you know, he kind of delves into that kind of stuff and talks about it. And he's a guy that is, you know, he's not someone that's going to sit there and just take whatever, you know, the Bears give him. You know, like Matt made a great point there in terms of, you know, he's gonna fight back, say, why are we doing this way? You know, if Shane Waldron does something he doesn't like, he's gonna kick back. And I know the big deal was made last year when Justin said, you know, there's a lot of voices inside and the coaches and all that stuff. And Caleb is not gonna shy away from that. If there's something that it's not working and he's being thrown under the bus, I think Caleb will come out and speak. And that's something that we, as you know, as a fan base and the Bears, hopefully as an organization, are ready for. This is a guy that's a deep thinker. You know, he's been living on his own since 18 years old, he has his own apartment and all that stuff. So this is a guy that's prepared himself to be this kind of player, this the first overall. And I just see him as more of a guy he's all business. You know, this guy's gonna come in, he's gonna be like a mercenary, right? Like, you know, if he wants to win, if the Bears are not doing what he wants or feels that they're going to be competitive and help him win, I think I could see him just saying, yeah, I'm going somewhere else. So, I mean, that's the kind of guy I think we're getting here. So let's just, you know, embrace him. Let's take him in and give him time. Just give him time to be a rookie. And, you know, if he has a three interception game, let's not go ahead and bury the kid and just understand he is a rookie, very talented rookie, but he's going to be a rookie. And we just got to kind of, I guess, temper some of the expectations that they have placed on this kid. Not us here, but media and on all the other stuff.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, he was he chose to play at a high school, a particular high school in the Washington, D.C. area. And to make his commute a lot easier, he asked his parents if he can get an apartment near the school to cut down his commuting time. And they trusted him so much that they allowed him to get this apartment to live on his own. And family is a big deal to him. His father is a very successful businessman, and Caleb would go to see him work and learn leadership skills from his dad and, you know, how to be organized and meticulous in his thinking and so forth. And his mom, a very vibrant, very personable woman, he got those traits from her, the value of complimenting teammates and others and being a facilitator to them. So by all accounts, this guy looks like a perfect gentleman and a great teammate, and he's got the physical athletic skills to become a great quarterback. So this is, should be an exciting time for Bears fans. And for those of us who wanted Justin Fields to get another year with the organization, hey, it didn't happen. And we'll never know. Yeah. We'll never know if he would have succeeded, but we do know that we'd be a member of the Chicago Bears, and we're all Bears fans, so let's root for the young man and not complain about his nail polish or anything like that.
Plus, Justin went to the perfect organization, perfect spot for him. I think he's gonna succeed there, you know, in Pittsburgh as well. So, yeah, again, just the going back to touching your point there. Although, yeah, this is a kid that's driven. I mean, he's goal driven. I mean, he says it talks about the whole manifestation, put things out there, and he puts goals out there, and you know. A lot of people kind of heard him say, hey, I'm going after the GOAT in terms of Tom Brady. He wants 8 championships and all that. Like, this is what drives him. This is what motivates him. And similar, I kind of took it to similar. I'm curious if you guys think the same way. Like LeBron James. LeBron James came in as anointed as the next great guy, right, after Michael Jordan. And I think LeBron had his, you know, goal set on getting championships and doing all this stuff. And he saw that it wasn't working in Cleveland. He up and left to Miami. And then from Miami, he went back to Cleveland. And so this is a guy that I think Caleb the same way. I think Caleb is driven by winning championships. I think he's driven by being, you know, being great. And I think if the Bears are not living up to his expectations, I see him saying, you know what, guys, I'm out of here. This ain't working. So it's a whole different athlete, a whole different player for the Bears. It's something that hopefully Ryan Poles and company doing their due diligence, you know, into his background. Are ready for. So that's all I'm trying to put out there. But again, he's a rookie, very talented. He's going to have his struggles, but this is a kid that's going to be driven to win. And I think that's something that you have to look forward to.
Yeah, I want to echo what Danny just said. You know, the NFL has been very, very slow to learn how to scout quarterbacks. I mean, as John put up, 6 first-round quarterbacks were traded for, you know, for almost nothing this past this off season, and a lot of that has to do with the league knows it's a quarterback year, but they're overreacting. I mean, it's not a quarterback year, a quarterback league, and so they're overreacting by overdrafting certain players. You know, the fact of the matter is that Mitch Trubisky should have been a second round quality quarterback. That's where he should have been drafted. And other quarterbacks who have been chosen high, should, you know, years ago, they would have been chosen in the second or third round. And the same could be said about Justin Fields. We could quibble about that. But the league just has not learned how to properly evaluate quarterbacks, draft them at their real value because they're afraid they might miss out on a Patrick Mahomes. And they've also been very, very slow at grooming these athletic quarterbacks to play in a new style in the NFL. Instead, they're trying to make them the traditional drop-back quarterbacks, and that type of style is not conducive for a lot of these quarterbacks who have been moved around.
The other thing, it was a great point. Another thing I was talking to somebody and they kind of threw it in there is like a lot of there's a lot of new owners, right? And a lot of these owners don't really know football. A lot of these owners are just millionaires, billionaires, and they have the money to buy these teams. And they want to see results. And they're quick to fire coaches within a year or 2 years. You know, before it was a coach got 3 or 4 years minimum before they were jettisoned out. Now you see 1 year, 2 year firings because a lot of these owners just want instant gratification, instant success. Mm-hmm. And what happens when that regime comes in and drafts a quarterback? And then that regime is gone within a year or two. That quarterback hasn't developed yet. And guess what? A new coach comes in like, I don't like this guy. So that quarterback's right behind the eight ball. And now that quarterback's career is kind of being pushed back. So, you know, a lot of these guys, like talk about, you know, the classic from 2021 with Justin and with Mac Jones and some of those guys. Like, I just think those guys are have to find the right spot, get their footing. And I think Justin's in the right spot. You know, obviously with Mac, he goes to Jacksonville. Is he going to play at all? We'll see. But you know, I think, you know, these are guys that get in the right spot and just kind of learn and build and you know, grow with them. You know, we're seeing it a little bit here with Baker Mayfield. You know, how many times was he, you know, was on his fourth team now, fifth team? I forgot. But fourth, you know, he was a bust, right? And all of a sudden, look at him now. He gets with Sean McVay and he gets some more confidence in. There he goes and he works with Dave Canales, who runs a system kind of similar to Shane Waldron, right? And he has a great year, makes a Pro Bowl. And I would probably use that into a big contract with the Bucs. So, you know, it's I think these quarterbacks are just dumped aside really quick. And I think a lot of it is, like you're right, they don't know how to develop them. They don't know how to put them in a proper situation. But you just got to have patience with these guys. You know, Caleb's going to have four interception games. He might have, you know, multiple games like that. But he's also going to have four touchdown, you know, no interception games as well. He's just got to have to go up and down with the rookie, you know, with the rookie season. So we'll see how it turns. But yeah, this guy, I think he'll be the most talented passer, natural thrower of the football, other than maybe Jay Cutler. That I've seen play for the Bears.
Yeah. Jordan says, this is literally why I think J.J. McCarthy goes to New England. The Crafts can't help but see a Michigan quarterback who's a winner and associated with Tom Brady. Wouldn't surprise me if they force J.J. M. to be the pick. Fascinating news today. The coming out of a report on ESPN, I believe it was that could there potentially be a reunion between J.J. McCarthy and John Harbaugh?
I've heard this. I heard this 2 weeks ago, but I didn't believe it. And I don't want to put out there. I don't like to spread rumors, but I heard this two weeks ago. And now I see Schefter talking about it today on ESPN. And for those who are not following, what's going on is Minnesota, in their pursuit of a quarterback, went to the Chargers not for the fifth pick overall. They initially went there and see if they were interested in trading Justin Herbert, because obviously Herbert is under that huge contract. The Chargers are under a full rebuild with Jim Harbaugh, and this will give them an opportunity, them being the Chargers, to rebuild, start, you know, the quarterback clock all over again with his quarterback, with Jim's quarterback from Michigan. So I mean, that's the thing. What I heard was first and second round, for the two first round picks this year, a first and second round pick next year, and another first round pick the following year. I mean, it's reaching Herschel Walker type of return. And with Minnesota, it doesn't make sense, right? Because you're taking on a huge contract. Okay. You still got to pay Justin Jefferson. So I don't know how that's going to work, but it's hard for me to kind of put my brain around that big trade happening, but
yeah, I've heard it. Jordan says it's a $70 million plus debt cap, so it's not kind of feasible to build a roster. Although, you know, the anticipation is that the
all young guys.
Yeah, a lot of young guys, and the cap is going to increase. You know, I've seen funnier things happen, but it's something I'm not going to bet on. I know ESPN Bets already has like a odds on it. That's a bet that I'm not going to take. All right, everyone, we're going to close the show here. We're going to get some rest and then prep for tomorrow's big show. Hope you can join us at least for a little while. And if you're with us for all 32 picks, you know, I'll send you a prize or something like that. All right, for Danny Shimon, for Jordan Severa, and for Matt Waldman, our special guest, thank you all for watching, and we'll see you all tomorrow.
Tomorrow. We'll be right back.